Welcome to the Reclaim Your Rise podcast. My name is Lauren Bongiorno, nationally board certified health coach and founder and CEO of Risely Health, where we help people and families impacted by type 1 diabetes take ownership over their lives so that they can transform with more freedom and confidence. Everyone has a different reason to be here. You might be seeking knowledge, support, or community, but at your core, I know that you long for something deeper. You're here for transformation. And that's what the Reclaim Your Rise podcast is all about.
And before this season, I had to know why I was doing it. I had to write down all the reasons I was doing it, who I was doing it for, and why I was simply doing this, because it was not to be on TV. And I knew literally simply walking up those stairs and walking across that stage was going to be a win, because I wore my Omnipod Visible and I wore my Dexcom Visible, and I openly talked about it. Whether I fell on the first obstacle or the last obstacle, it was a win for me.
A quick reminder before we start the show that nothing you hear on the Reclaim Your Rise podcast should be a substitute for personalized professional medical advice. Please always consult your physician or other medical professional before making any changes to your diet, insulin dosages, or healthcare plan. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Reclaim Your Rise show. So right now, if you're listening to this on the day that it airs, I'm actually away on my honeymoon, which is crazy to say. I got married on Friday and Chris and I are officially husband and wife, but I really wanted to make sure we had episodes ready to go for you guys, even though I was away because, well, diabetes doesn't take any vacations, am I right? Today's guest, though, is a special one because it's not every day that we have a ninja warrior on the show. You may have seen the online hype a few weeks ago when 16-year-old Katie Bones stepped on national TV, proudly displaying her Omnipod and Dexcom on both triceps ready to compete. Katie was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes when she was 11 years old, and the first question she asked the doctor was, "When can I climb again?" Since her diagnosis, she has competed in the USA Climbing Youth National Championships, American Ninja Warrior Junior, and most recently, the adult version of American Ninja Warrior, where people as young as 15 can qualify. She was the top female scorer on the semifinal round of Ninja Warrior on August 8th and made it to the finale on August 15th in Las Vegas. She ended up hitting the water and being disqualified there, but there were so many other positive wins that came out from that night alone. One big one is really how many people and kids living with type 1 diabetes watched and were so inspired by how she embraced her T1D. Katie and I sit down today to talk about her diagnosis, how she had a really tough time last year competing with her blood sugars, what her nutrition and insulin planning look like for the semifinal and finals this season, and identifying her body's patterns, especially around adrenaline. I'm confident that Katie is going to go on to do big things in her athletic career, and I can't wait for us to cheer her on. Without further ado, help me introduce my guest today, Katie Bone, and let's rise. All right, Katie, it is so good to have you on the podcast. Who would have thought we would have a ninja warrior on the podcast? Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So excited. So I would love to start off in, you know, the name of the podcast, Reclaim Your Rise. Can you share an interesting story or moment about a recent time where you reclaimed your rise with type 1 diabetes?
So I had climbing nationals about 2 or 3 weeks ago, and last year, it was a really, really hard nationals for me. I struggled with my blood sugar a lot. I almost got pulled from the competition. So mentally, after that was really hard for me because it felt like for the first time in a really long time at a competition that diabetes won and I didn't perform because of it. So I had a lot of anxiety and some doubt going into nationals this year, but I had to remember that last year my diabetes was just not the same as this year, and that I'm a completely different person than I was last year. So I had to let go of that and let go of wanting to control that in order to perform and execute this year. So being able to do that and being in a very different headspace for me was a huge win.
I love that. And I'm really curious. It's interesting with athletes, right? When you're going season to season or competition to competition, most people without diabetes, they have to focus on more of the like, all right, I got to get my agility up, or, you know, my strength or this or that. And for you, it seems like what you had to work on was your blood sugar so that you can mm-hmm. perform how you wanted to and get those outcomes. So what was, you know, when you say that you were struggling with your numbers last year, like where were you struggling? How were you struggling? Are we talking like 300s? Are we talking like you were constantly going low? Like what did that look like?
So when I, for semifinals for bouldering, when I first went into isolation, my blood sugar was like 300. And I think that was due to what I ate and then adrenaline. And so we gave a lot of insulin for that. And then I ended up crashing right before I was supposed to go. And my blood sugar was like 40. So we have a rule with USA Climbing that if my blood sugar is low or high before I go out, they'll pull me from the run order and put me last. Mm-hmm. But that was going to be another 2 hours. So we ended up pulling me, which messed up my entire warm up. So that was really hard to manage my warm up after I was fully warm. And the second time when I was actually, when I was supposed to go out, my blood sugar was even lower. And by the time that I was actually going out, I had to have like 14 applesauce and some fruit. And I was super nauseous and I was crying in ISO and I was so mentally and physically just done. And I ended up making finals in that round, which I was very surprised about. And then I had finals later that day. So I just did not feel good because of all the applesauce. I couldn't eat any more food before finals. And I just felt so terrible from being low and everything. So that was really hard. And I didn't perform in finals. And I was mentally so just drained. And I still had to do speed climbing and lead climbing that week. And I was mentally just so out of it. So I did not perform in the other disciplines. And that whole week was really hard because it was a big competition. And it felt like diabetes had stole something that I worked so hard from me.
Mm. Yeah, that has to be hard where you're also going through that, like, it's not fair, like other competitors, like they don't have to be dealing with this. And you trained and you were so prepared in every other way. And it's like, you can prepare for your numbers, but then sometimes, like I like to say, like diabetes is just going to diabetes. And like, of course, like worst timing for it to happen, but you crashed and that's what, you know, ended up happening.
So unpredictable.
So unpredictable. And at the time, were you doing things ahead of time and trying to be more proactive with your numbers? Or is that something that you've learned how to do a little bit better now?
I always have. A few days before I was diagnosed, I was at a big climbing competition and I just didn't perform. And then a few days later is when I was diagnosed. That year, I didn't compete a whole lot because every competition just, it was so hard to figure this new thing out. And in isolation, we're not allowed to have our phones. So it was also figuring out this rule with USA Climbing because I needed my phone. And that first year competing and just training was really hard. And then it was, okay, we need to figure this out because this is something that I want to do and have wanted to do for so long. And then it just became a thing of how do we figure this out and how do we thrive with this? So yeah, it was just figuring I have to have my phone locked in my bouldering bucket and I have to get an ISO monitor if I need to get my phone. And then I'll just have my little Dexcom receiver and stuff. And then it was just figuring out different snacks so that I wasn't sick of what I was already having and stuff that made me feel good to compete with.
Hmm. And when you say isolation, in the beginning, I thought you were talking about like pandemic quarantine, but I think you're talking about something different. So what is that?
So at climbing competitions, we are not allowed to see the climbs beforehand. We can't watch people, see results or any of that. So we get put into isolation where that's where our warm-up is before we go out and climb. And then when we go out and climb, we sit in chairs facing away from the wall.
Wow. So you're really like, it's so you don't have an advantage, but I'm sure also it helps with your mindset to kind of just like zone in and like focus on yourself.
For me, it does. Other athletes, like, it's a red point format where we get 3 hours to climb. We have about 8 climbs and you get to watch people. You get to do the climbs generally as many times as you want within that 3 hours. And personally for me, mentally, that's a lot harder because you kind of have an idea of how people are doing, but you kind of don't. And it stresses me out a little bit more. So the on-site format, which we have isolation and everything, I like that format a lot more.
Mm. And that's how the finals of Ninja Warrior were this time? Is that right?
No. So for Ninja, you get to watch people all season long. You get to see everybody's runs and you have rules. And during rules, they put testers on the obstacle so that you can actually see what you have to do.
Got it. Okay. I've seen like Ninja Warrior in terms of like, I'm like, you know, flipping through the channel over the years and then I'm like, oh, like I want to watch like a few runs, but this is the first time once I saw you, found you through Instagram. I mean, you were like making so much noise in the diabetes world in the best way. I was like, all right, I got to get like into this. So I was able to watch the finals on obviously like Monday night. But can we talk about the August 8th? So that was before, that was what got you into this final round. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. So what were your blood sugars like during that one? Because I know you didn't hit the buzzer. Yeah. And I heard something that like on the obstacle that you fell, your blood sugar was low. So tell us about that.
That was a rough night for me. So Los Angeles and Vegas national finals are all filmed at night, which is a different variable with blood sugars as well. So Los Angeles was super cold. So warm-up was really hard and I didn't get a lot of warm-up. But before I was going to go, I want to say like within that hour, my blood sugar was super high because of adrenaline. And adrenaline is really hard for competitions because it shoots up super high and as much insulin as you give it, it feels like it does not drop. And then all of a sudden you just crash and just feel terrible. So for Los Angeles, it was raining, it was cold. So that was really hard to manage. And then my blood sugar ended up being like 30 when I was going. So I felt super dizzy and just sick. And I mean, you know how it feels. And when I was on Ghost Town, well, right before Salmon Ladder, I was looking at the Salmon Ladder bar and I couldn't see it. It felt like it was moving back and forth. I wanted to like throw up. I was not feeling good. And my depth perception was off. And I was like, I don't think I can jump to this bar. I can't, like, I feel like I can't find it. And yeah, in Ghost Town, it was really hard to see the next obstacle. So that was definitely frustrating, but it was definitely a run that I was still proud of, especially with all of the uncontrollables that I had to deal with that night.
Right. So it's like a lot of the times it sounds like for you, there have been these like unpredictable blood sugar things happening. And like, it's like a 50-50 mm-hmm. kind of like split of, is it going to hinder me from getting to this next round? Or is it something that I'm going to look back on and saying, wow, like I was able to move forward in the competition despite everything that I went through with diabetes and blood sugars and how I was feeling.
And I'm generally able to manage it fairly well. I mean, there's still like little moments of I go a little bit low and I have to have a snack before competitions and it's fine. But those are the two biggest moments that happened that were like, well, that was really hard to manage and it really sucked because it definitely hindered my performance a little bit.
Yeah. And I'm super curious, like, do you have any like rituals or routines with how you eat, or is it like the same, like you eat the same dinner the night before because you know it kind of like fuels you up and gives you a lot of like that like carb loading that a lot of marathon runners do? Or is it, you know, you're kind of just like winging it and trying to have your blood sugar stable overnight? Do you have anything specific like before you go on stage? Like, just get, I really want to know like specifics. Like, I'm very invested in the like, what is the like 24 hours of eating look like leading up to a competition?
The day before, usually it's not like too crazy, like I have to eat at this time, eat this specific thing. Like for dinner, I usually eat Chipotle before competitions. And then if I compete in the morning, I'll have just like a little bit of fruit. I won't eat too much. If I'm competing in the afternoon, I'll have Chipotle again. So before all of the filmings, I had Chipotle and then I got matcha before. Because matcha, I knew exactly how to bolus it and how it was affecting my body. And it was carbs, because like Chipotle doesn't have like a ton of carbs for what I get, and the matcha had enough carbs to give me a little bit of a bump without anything crazy, and it was fairly predictable for me. And it just, I always feel better when I have matcha before I compete. So that's generally what I've been doing, and that's what I did before all of the filming.
Okay. And then insulin strategy. So for this last one, the last run that you did for the finals on Monday, were your blood sugars pretty good throughout it? Or besides like rolling your ankle, like did you have, because it sounds like that was the main thing that kind of like hindered you a little bit, were your blood sugars good throughout?
My blood sugars were good. They started to drop, like within the hour before, they dropped a little bit and I just had little Honey Stinger gummies because it's super light, but it has enough carbs to have a little bit of a bump. And then I just decreased my insulin as well. So that was big, because it's also filming at night was very different than qualifying was filmed during the day. So mm-hmm. how I eat and how my blood sugars are at, say, 1 a.m. is very different than mm-hmm. 2 p.m. So yeah, I just had like little honey stinger gummies. I had my pre-workout has like a little bit of carbs, which is great because it gives it a little bit bump when I start warming up. But otherwise, it was manageable, fairly easy.
It sounds like you're reducing insulin, if anything, but how does that work with the adrenaline spike that happens? Like, where is your ideal situation of like where to start blood sugar wise? Like, what were you before the finals at nighttime? Do you remember?
I was like 110, 120. Okay. I feel really good to compete at like 110, 120. Like, that's my ideal spot. For adrenaline's really unpredictable. Sometimes I shoot up really high, or sometimes it has no effect. And I personally in Vegas didn't really have any nerves, which that also plays a big thing. If I noticeably am like super nervous, and I wasn't really nervous, so that was really helpful. When I first started to warm up, it started to drop a little bit. So I had some honey stinger gummies, and then that was perfect until I was done.
Seems like that worked. It's like, how do we just like replicate that for next time? But I find that too, like when I have adrenaline spikes, especially with high intensity exercise, it's usually in the morning time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not competing at your level, but like I've done, you know, CrossFit and, mm-hmm. you know, different type of like HIIT activity. And if I do it at nighttime, I don't get as much of the adrenaline spike as I do in the morning time.
Okay. So when I have competitions in the morning, it's a little bit harder to manage, and it's very different than at night. For qualifying, I didn't really check my blood sugar a whole ton. Like I was just very just distracted. There's a lot going on, first time on in this arena, all the things. And I definitely, my dad, I mean, was checking and stuff, but it was perfect. Like I never had to have a snack. It pretty much stayed the same the whole day, which was awesome to not have to have that variable for my first time on that stage.
Yeah, that was a great first time experience for sure.
For sure.
Okay, let's take a quick 90-second commercial break. So diabetes affects people of all ages, all walks of life, and the numbers are only growing. The Diabetes Research Institute, if you're not aware of them, they are the leader in cure-focused research, and they've made substantial contributions to the field over the last few decades. If you want to stay up to date on everything about their news, their advancements, I really want to encourage you to become a DRI insider by joining their email list. I'm personally subscribed to it. They are my trusted go-to source for diabetes cure and research updates, and I always feel just more hopeful and inspired after reading emails from their scientists and team. And as a listener of the Reclaim Your Eyes podcast, when you subscribe to DRI's list, you will get a free condensed digital download of our diabetic health journal, which will help you better identify your body's blood sugar patterns and improve your mindset around living with diabetes. Just click the link in the show notes below right now to drop your first name, last name, and email, or go to support.diabetesresearch.org/reclaimyourrise. I'm curious, like before we continue talking about the finals and the impact that it has on the community, being that you just wore your Dexcom and your Omnipod out so, you know, proud, I want to go back to and not skip over, like, what was your diagnosis like? Because it sounds like you had a very like active childhood, and mm-hmm. what did it look like when you were diagnosed, and how did it impact your view of what you thought was possible for yourself and the goals that you had?
When I was first diagnosed, so my grandmother, who actually passed away this same year I was diagnosed, she had type 1. Mm. And she didn't manage it very well, and she was always so sick for as long as I could remember. She actually died from complications of it. So that was my view. That was all I knew about it. That was just this negative and terrifying view of type 1. And then I heard the word diabetes, and I just instantly started crying. And I was terrified, because I didn't know I was going to climb again. I asked the doctor, first question, when can I climb again? But there was also this question of, can I compete again? Can I compete at the same level? Can I, all of these goals that I have set for myself and my future, are those even attainable anymore? And I quickly learned that they were, but I also had to make this decision if I was going to do this despite diabetes, because I also learned that I could hate diabetes and hate the diagnosis and hate all of these things, but also love life at the same time. They didn't have to be, now I have diabetes and I have these hard days and now I can hate all these things. And it's okay to hate diabetes. You don't have to love it. You don't have to love all of the bits of it, but you can still love life at the same time.
That's a really powerful message to send. And I think is a very like unique way of thinking coming out of what your experience was seeing your grandma and, you know, just getting diagnosed at, how old were you? Were you 13?
I was 11.
Okay. So yeah, that age, you're super impressionable too. And you're probably at a, you know, a peak of, like you said, having those big dreams of climbing. And just, it's so full circle though, to see where you are now today and all that you've accomplished, knowing that there are so many people commenting on your posts and your pictures saying to you, like, you're such an inspiration to me, or my, you know, daughter or son saw you on TV and said, wow, like mom, like she looks just like me. So how does that, did you expect that reaction? And were you always as open with your diabetes, or was that something that came on later?
I was not the most open when I was first diagnosed. I didn't want to wear my insulin pump visible. And before this season, I had to go back to that. I had to go back to how I felt. And that scared 11-year-olds in the hospital. And I didn't want the next kid in the hospital to feel the same way I felt. So if I was able to have this representation of that you can do the things despite diabetes, and wearing my insulin pump and wearing my Dexcom and all of that would do something for one kid, or one kid who is diagnosed next week, and then they can watch this and know that it is okay, and that they can achieve what they want to do, and that they don't feel the same way. And before this season, I had to know why I was doing it. I had to write down all the reasons I was doing it, who I was doing it for, and why I was simply doing this, because it was not to be on TV. And I knew literally simply walking up those stairs and walking across that stage was going to be a win, because I wore my Omnipod visible and I wore my Dexcom visible. And I openly talked about it. Whether I fell on the first obstacle or the last obstacle, it was a win for me.
Yeah. And it did exactly what you, you know, hope and intended, you know, for it to do. It was a win for you, but it was a win for so many people living with type 1 diabetes. And I'm curious the reason why you weren't so open with it in the beginning. I come from a competitive athletic background. I played D1 soccer in college. And I know that I literally did not, like, I didn't tell my coaches or my teammates, like, those people are supposed to, like, you know, like you're supposed to be the closest with, they're supposed to have you your back. But I had this complex that, like, I didn't want to be seen as weaker or as like a disadvantage to the team. And I'm sure my coach knew, because of course, like, I had to submit like medical records and things like that to the team, but like it was never discussed. And that's something, and part of like my growth journey has been like, it doesn't make you weak, it makes you different, but like you can still accomplish anything that you want to. So was that part of the reasoning, was like mostly in the competitive space, or was it something else?
I think I was scared. I didn't want to be different. I mean, especially in the world we're living in, like there are things that it's frowned upon to be different, and it shouldn't be, but it is. And I was scared of that. I was scared of what my teammates would think, or when I'm competing. And I just was like, well, they don't have to know. Like, I can do the thing and I can compete and no one has to know. And that was a big thing about this year in my story. I was like, I don't want kids to feel that way. I don't want them to feel like they should be ashamed of this, because it's nothing to actually be embarrassed or ashamed about. And it wasn't super long time in which I was like, didn't want to wear my pump visible. But I definitely had a little while after I was diagnosed that I was like, well, I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready to have this visible. I don't know a lot about this. I don't know anyone with diabetes. I was scared of that. And that's why I was like, well, if I can be this person for someone, for a kid, a teen, or an adult, then I want to be that person. And that's why this year it was so easy for me to be open about it, because I knew the impact of simply wearing my Omnipod and Dexcom visible was going to make.
Yeah. And I'm curious if it was a moment. Did anybody like usually what happens, I feel like, is when we're afraid of something and then we do it and kind of face that fear and then we have a positive response back, you're like, oh wow, like that's not as scary as I thought it was going to be. And it actually was helpful or beneficial for myself or for somebody else. So was there a moment where maybe for the first time you wore your pump or you wore your CGM and someone saw you on the street and said, oh my gosh, I wear one too. Or maybe you were rock climbing and somebody said, oh, hey, I have diabetes as well. Like anything like that, that you can pin it back to?
The first time I wore it visible, all of my friends and coaches, like they didn't care. They didn't make me feel different. They still treated me the same person as they did 3 or 4 months before this. And that was like, oh, this isn't actually like a bad thing. This isn't something that I should be ashamed or embarrassed about. And one of the times that it was visible, I actually saw 3 type 1s at the climbing gym in the same day. And I was just like, oh, this is something that other people have, which I knew that, but it's different when you see it. And that was big for me, is just seeing someone else have it visible. And so I knew that if I wore it visible, I could give permission to another kid or another teenager or an adult or someone who felt the same way, I could give them permission to do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was one of the questions I had put up a question box on Instagram. And I was like, what questions did everybody have for Katie? And somebody said, like, does she climb with like other T1D climbers, or does she, you know anybody in this space? So have you made friends with any of those people?
Yes and no. There's no one that I like regularly hang out with. I mean, I know people who have type 1, and there's people on social media. And the year I was diagnosed, I went to diabetes camp. But just like sometimes just seeing someone with their insulin pump, especially even now where the place that I'm in is just like, it's really powerful to see that, because it's like, oh, this is okay. And actually I babysit a little boy who has type 1. And he didn't want to wear his pump on his arm. He didn't want it to make him feel weird. And after seeing me on the show and seeing me just always wear it on my arm, he decided to start wearing it on his arm more. And there was one day that I had my insulin pump failed and I had to change it while I was there. And I asked if he wanted to help me change it. And he was excited to do that because it wasn't him. And he got to see me do that and me put it on his arm, on my arm. So after that, he wore it in his arm like the next day. And that was amazing just to see that, and his mom to tell me that, to know that even that little decision, that little thing made a difference for him.
You're making such an impact. It's really great. And I think that if everybody listening can have like one takeaway from this, it's that you living your life so like unapologetically and vulnerably and like confidently just gives other people the permission to do the same. And that's how we create that ripple effect. So being on the other side of the finals, how did you fell on the second obstacle or the third?
Fourth obstacle.
The fourth obstacle. Okay. I was losing count at the time. It was going so fast. I was like, oh, what's happening? Okay. So when you fell in the water, what was going through your head? Was it, oh my goodness, that was like, how did I mess it up? At what point did it go to, okay, I can't wait to like now like start practicing and getting ready for the next competition?
I'm still processing it. And to be 100% completely honest, I was disappointed. I really wanted it. I wanted stage one. I wanted, because I knew that I could do so much more and that wasn't my best. That wasn't my 100%. And so that was really hard for me when I hit the water and I was just like, my season's over. And it hit me. And it was hard to process that and just be like, okay, well, where do we go from here? What do we want? What's next in climbing? What do we want next year? Where are my goals? And it's definitely something that's pushing me to work harder for that next year. But it was definitely a disappointment for me, that specific run. I wasn't disappointed in my season, but that run was hard as just an athlete, take out all of the type 1 and the interviews and the TV, just like that one moment was really hard for me. And I'm starting to process it more, and watching the runs feels very different. It's like, oh, you see it in a different way and you kind of relive that moment and you relive all the things of that night and that week. So I'm really proud of my season. I'm really proud of what I was able to do and the impact I was able to make. But that run was definitely disappointing for me. And watching it the other night, and I was expecting this for 3 months, but watching it, I was like, oh, that's it. There's no more episodes. My season is over. Which is okay, but it was definitely a hard moment when that really hit me.
I could imagine you're working so hard and you're, you know, it's not what you imagine. I'm sure you visualize hitting that buzzer 100,000 times and then for it not to happen, but you are only 16 years old and you have so much ahead of you and like you're so mature for your age and we can't wait to cheer you on and see what you do next. And I would love, you know, for you to share for everybody listening, what is one message that you would love to share with anyone or a parent who's listening, living with, who has a child living with type 1 diabetes?
If there is something you want to do, go for it, because you don't want to get to the end of your life, whenever that may be, and regret not doing something. And if you find what you are truly passionate about, pursue that, and then you can share that passion with others, because you simply being you can make a huge impact in someone's life. And your voice is so much bigger than you really realize. And that was something that I learned this year, is that I was able to make a huge impact. And my goal was to make an impact in one person's life. And I did that for so many people, which was insane and just something that I never could have imagined that I would be doing, that me sitting in that hospital, that 5.5 years later, that I would be sitting here talking to you and doing all of this stuff. So I never could have imagined that, and I would never change it. And I'm glad that if it was one decision or all these decisions leading up to this moment, that those decisions were made, and that I don't have any regrets from this season, and I don't have any regrets in the last 5 years leading up to this moment.
Yeah, you shouldn't, because everything is continuously leading you to the next path, mm-hmm. and building off of each other. So I would love to end this podcast interview with a rapid fire round of a few diabetes and non-diabetes related questions. Are you down for it?
I'm ready.
All right, here we go. All right, so what is your favorite food or drink to treat a low blood sugar?
Favorite food would have to be like the honey stinger waffles, like the little mini ones, because those are really good. And then probably either matcha or like a strawberry refresher is really good.
Yum. I'm down for any of those.
Yes.
All right. We've already talked about this, but what is your diabetes tech that you wear?
I wear an Omnipod and an insulin and a Dexcom.
You've probably said that like 100 times too.
It's fine.
It's all good. We're twins. I wear the same ones as well. Who is on your Dexcom share, if anybody?
My mom, my dad, my aunt, and then I have a family friend. It's only if I stay the night at my aunt's house or my family friend's house.
Okay. Out of all of them, this is a bonus one. Out of all of them, is there anybody who's like really like a little bit too aggressive with the, hey, you're low, hey, you're high. And you're like, I know, I treated her it.
my parents used to be. And then I was just like, all right, like I have all of my notifications. I already know. I already got the snack. Like, just give me that space. And it was just hard because I was just like, it felt like more of a reminder of all of it. And I was just like, I'm good. Like, if I need it, I will ask for help.
Right.
So probably them. They've gotten a lot better. So that's good.
That's good. Work in progress. Yes. Okay. What is your favorite pre-competition pump up song or ritual?
Depends on what I'm doing. So for speed climbing, I have Speed Worlds next week. So I'm really excited about that. And I listen to all rap. And then right before I go, I listen to like a chill song. And I've been listening to like, it's Young Blood by like Noah Kahan. I want to say his last
name.
So
good.
That's the song I listened to right before I speed climb. In Vegas, I listened to Glorious by Macklemore right before I went.
That's good. That's intense. Yeah. A little different, mm-hmm. different energies, but so good. Okay. And then who is somebody that inspires you and why?
Everyone with type 1, because it's given me the purpose and the reason to do all of this and to be so open about this. And there's one ninja, she's on the show. It's Jessie Lebrecq. She is such a phenomenal athlete. And I've just watched her over the years. And now getting to compete alongside of her and be friends with her has been awesome, especially to see her insight and to see how she is as an athlete. So yeah, probably those.
That's incredible. Katie, thank you so much for being here with us today and for sharing your light and all of your encouragement and yeah, just being you.
Thank you for having me.
Where can we follow you? Plug yourself out. Do your thing.
My Instagram is _KatieBone_.
Perfect. Any other things coming up that people can watch and tune in for?
I have Speed Climbing Worlds next week. I'm assuming they're going to live stream that. So I will post about the live stream if they are over on my Instagram.
Okay, sweet. And then we'll see you on Ninja Warrior next season?
Yes.
Sweet. All right, Katie, thank you so much. A big thank you to the Diabetes Research Institute for sponsoring today's episode. Don't forget, if you haven't yet, to click the link in the show notes below to get on their insider email list. All you have to do is put in your name and email so that you don't miss out on any cure and research updates.